He's one of the best on the Bears beat, from my money. Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune joining us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. And he was heard last night, Marshall. Dan Wiederer got a question in on Hard Knocks last night. How'd you feel about it, Weedsy? Do you feel good about that? You got a little shine last night?
Yeah, so I got a few texts from buddies that were watching, and they were commenting on my question-asking ability. I let them know that it was heavily edited and abbreviated question, but it was included in the trailer leading up to episode two, so that's my little bit of Hard Knocks shine for the week.
Nice. What else stood out to you watching Hard Knocks last night?
So, now we get into the real story, because I was a victim of the HBO Max outage. And has anybody gotten to the bottom of this? And so I'll give you the full behind-the-curtain look at my world last night. I was in Michigan with my family, took a little day to get away. We were all ready to watch. My son was there. My mother-in-law wanted to watch this as well. And the time rolls around. We're on East Coast time in Michigan, and 9 o'clock rolls around, and it's not showing up in the HBO Max queue. And you're resetting, and you're logging out, you're logging back in, you're rebooting the Roku stick on the Cottage TV, you're doing all these different things. And I say, let me check Twitter and see if anybody else is having this problem. And I got to admit, the 25 minutes that followed, following the meltdown of people on Twitter not able to get Hard Knocks Episode 2 because of the Max delay, was probably as good of social media content as you're going to get for a long, long time.
Yeah, the sense of entitlement.
There was a lot of reaction going on. I was like, I tried to watch. Obviously, I had to be up early this morning, Dan. So I was like, maybe I should just go to bed. And I was like, do I just need to go back to, I had this thought, do I need to just go back to cable? Because like, if I had cable, I would have watched this live at 8 o'clock. And yeah, nah, it's the first time.
Yeah, Marshall, I had an early wake-up call today as well, and so I'm sitting there. I'm like, how long do I wait? How long do I wait? And I got to 10:10 East Coast time, and I'm like, look, like this thing may not come on tonight. I'm just going to have to deal with it and watch it tomorrow. And I gave up, and apparently it was about 4 to 6 minutes after I actually went to bed that it showed up in the queue.
Yeah, you made the right choice, because I could set my alarm for 3 a.m. and just watch this in the morning. But obviously, it's a big week when we're talking about joint practices, everything else. Just one joint practice. So what do you think maybe Matt Eberflus learned from maybe last year's experience, or what did you guys learn about Matt Eberflus's approach to this experience that you're looking forward to kind of paying attention to this week?
Well, what's interesting and what I really want to get a little bit more on today is why they felt like the one practice versus the two practice in the crossover session was more beneficial. And you hear from players all the time and saying that second day, you know, the first day the competitive juices really get going, and then the second day sometimes the competitive anger takes over, because you're kind of at that point of camp where everybody's a little edgy, and then whatever happens on that first day carries over into day two and you get into that situation. But I think what they found in Indianapolis last year is you could get a lot of work done in a controlled setting, minimize the risk of injury, and do a lot of things that are scripted and go back and forth between the coaching staff. Hey, we need a lot of work on this. Hey, we need a lot of work on that. And you can kind of match up some of those things to get very, very detailed and specific work in. And so I think that they're looking forward to having that session tomorrow at Halas Hall with the Bengals coming to town. Obviously, that's a pretty good offense with some high-powered playmakers that will test the defense that really feels itself right now at this stage of the preseason. And so I think that will be valuable for sure.
Is Matt Eberflus talking today? Because I was surprised he didn't speak yesterday at the Hall.
Yeah, I mean, we've been on the sort of rhythm of coordinator Eberflus, coordinator Eberflus, coordinator Eberflus, and so this should be a Matt day for sure.
Okay, all right, good. Because, I mean, what do you think he's going to do? You think he's just going to match wits with the Bengals and not play his starters because of everything that they're going to get, or they think they're going to get out of the Thursday practice? Are we going to see Caleb Saturday, Dan?
I don't know, and that's where this gets a little bit tricky, because if you are going to do the practice on Thursday and you are going to kind of push it where you get a lot of work in, well, now sports science takes over, and they do all the studies and all the research on what's good for the body and how much rest you need after how many reps. And so it's going to be really interesting to see where their calculus is on that, because it's not an easy answer. I do think that with this offense, you need to get more work in. You cannot walk into week one with you know, such limited August reps for a new offense, a new quarterback, a lot of new faces, a lot of people trying to feel that chemistry out. And so they've got to make that calculation on whether they want to do that Saturday, whether they want to put them out there for a series or two against the Chiefs in Kansas City next Thursday. That's a tough decision, and Matt's going to have to kind of clarify what his thinking is on that.
So would you be surprised if he plays in both games?
Yeah, I don't see them playing in both, particularly with the quick turnaround from the Bengals game on Saturday to the road trip to Kansas City for next Thursday's game. So I don't see them playing in both, but you need to get a little bit more. As encouraging as that work in Buffalo was, I think you do need to get more live game action to really polish up some of the edges.
Dan, I was asking this question with Dan and Lawrence yesterday in transition, and the question is, how do you handle Austin Booker? And what I mean by that is, how seriously do we take what he did in that game and what the defensive line did in general as it pertains to potentially signing another defensive end, which Matt Eberflus, we listened to an interview question on CBS HQ yesterday where he kind of said, you know, we're still open to potentially signing somebody. How do you think that they are handling that from within right now, those that sack the quarterback?
You can never have too many of those guys, you know, and so no matter how many flashes Austin Booker gives you during training camp, gives you during preseason games, you're always going to have your eyes open for somebody that can help you, as long as it's not something where you have to pay an exorbitant price. And so it'll be really interesting to see where Ryan Poles leans in that direction. I think there's been nothing but encouragement inside the walls of Hallis Hall over the last 3 months for what Austin Booker has done, coming in as a guy who was, by his own admission, very raw coming out of college, and showing you some very natural agility, some natural body movement, some really good instincts for rushing the passer, and then to have it translate into production in a preseason game is encouraging. At the same time, you do know that you just really, really need to have as many guys that can affect the quarterback as possible. So if one of those opportunities presents itself, you go ahead and you take advantage of it, and then you adapt accordingly.
When you look at this offense right now, you talked about the fact that they need more work. What specifically up front are you looking at? Because it seems like with Nate Davis kind of starting to ramp up, that things might be what we expected them to be at the outset of the offseason. Maybe Matt Eberflus applied a little verbal pressure to get him back on his way.
Yeah, Marshall, I'll just tell you that every Nate Davis ramp-up period isn't one that gives me much excitement. You know, I mean, we're always in a ramp-up period with Nate Davis. Seriously. What I need to see Nate Davis do is practice for three consecutive weeks, and then you feel good about it. And that directly ties into your question about what you're looking for up front, because what you want in the second half of August is to start to feel cohesion. You want to start to feel chemistry. You hear guys like Tevin Jenkins last week say, you know, there is a point where I need to know who's playing center next to me, and who's playing center next to me sort of hinges on who's playing right guard, because Ryan Bates has slid from center to right guard to kind of fill in for Nate Davis when Nate Davis has been out. And so there's a point here where you've got to start to prioritize continuity. You've got to start to prioritize cohesion, and that point is now, in my opinion. And so at some point you've just got to figure out who are the five most reliable guys that you can take to opening day against the Titans and start to work with that group.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. Dan, I want to ask you a question similar to something I asked Mark Potash yesterday, as you and Potsy and myself, like, you guys have all been around since Mitch Trubisky and soon and earlier than that, even Trubisky looked good in his, like, early on in 2017, his first preseason game. Yeah. Had people buzzing a little bit. We know that Justin Fields, when we would watch him, when he would finally get in to practice, he was heaving it down the field and we were all giddy. Tell us why, or if it's different with Caleb Williams having had a really good start to his preseason Bears career.
Well, I'm going to do the fence straddling thing for this specific question here, because I did write in my column coming out of Buffalo that we're all old enough to remember when Mitch Trubisky completed 10 consecutive passes in his preseason debut against the Broncos in 2017.
Yes.
And it was like the adrenaline spike in Chicago and the euphoria was so over the moon. You know, I go back to Justin's second season in the final preseason game in Cleveland, where he threw three touchdown passes and had 156 yards passing. And you're like, okay, this looks like it's supposed to look like, and the kid's comfortable. And I actually remember talking to Luke Getsy a few days after that and kind of trying to feel out what's real and what's not, and being sort of reminded that, look, like, you're facing a lot of vanilla defenses. There's a lot to prove for these quarterbacks when you get into regular season game action and you're seeing a lot of exotic looks. You have to deal with pressure. You've got to deal with the ball in your hand, with the game on the line. Those are checkpoints that Caleb still has to clear. But where I do feel very, very encouraged about what I'm seeing from Caleb Williams since the spring and carrying over into training camp is his feel for the position seems to be very natural. It seems to be very high level. And you saw that during a handful of sequences in Buffalo where, you know, it's third and long and, you know, you don't have your first read and you're back there in the pocket and you've got to find something and you go through a couple reads and then you rip a fastball to DJ Moore and the chains move. And then the very next play, you get a chance to show off your playmaking gifts and throw that little screen pass to DeAndre Swift. And you see how a three and out turns into points, right? And the Bears get a field goal out of that. And you go, man, that's what really good quarterbacks in this league do. They take third and long, and then you ultimately get points out of that drive. And then you see them backed up and then the next drive, and they go down and they march inside the red zone. The throw to Kmet obviously being the big play on that. But even the third and long scramble that Caleb had was an absolute case study in quarterback feel. It's him using his eyes to diagnose what the defense is showing, reacting accordingly, getting in the open field, using the athleticism that he has in a way that is productive. Like, what I like about Caleb is he's sort of a, I'm going to throw it first type of guy. Whereas a lot of times, and I've talked to David about this with Justin, it was like the first sign of a pressure leak up front from the offensive line, it would turn into an episode of Tom and Jerry with Justin. And sometimes it was really exciting. You know, he'd get out of there and he'd break free for a scramble that, you know, set Chicago's imagination running wild. But too often that became sort of the crutch, and there wasn't enough of the quarterback feel and the playing the position the way the position is played at the NFL level by highly successful NFL quarterbacks. And so we'll see if Caleb can continue that, but there were certainly flashes of that in Buffalo.
I was surprised, honestly, that Caleb was as good as he was in those two series, and that's just relative to what we've seen in practice. Do you buy into, like, it was game day, a little more adrenaline going? Like, why do you think he all of a sudden, you know, was really good relative to what we've seen in camp?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up, because what we have seen in camp has been a lot more rickety than what we saw on Saturday afternoon. And so you have to ask yourself, like, what do I trust more? And so I want to see Caleb build upon what he did Saturday this week. You know, that's whatever he does against the Bengals tomorrow, whatever they decide to do on Saturday, if they play him or not. I want to see that build, because there have been moments in camp, and you've been out there living it too, Grody, where you see in the 7-on-7 periods and you're like, the ball's out late or the ball's not out at all. Mm-hmm. And when you're holding onto the ball in 7-on-7 and running out of bounds, and it's just like, man, that's a wasted rep. You say, man, there's just things here right now that aren't clicking. And that's why I've told people that, like, September is going to be a little bit bumpy. This is still a rookie quarterback in the very early stages of his development. And as much as we all want to take a time machine to Caleb Williams' breakthrough, it's going to take a stair climb to get there. And so, you got to be patient, but I do want to see these things translate in both environments. I do think players have talked about how Caleb just seems to turn on when the game comes along. And Caleb said after the game on Saturday that you just kind of feel a different level of focus, a different level of juice on game day. That's really encouraging to hear, because those are the results that we're ultimately going to judge his career on. And so hopefully he can continue that.
Dan, great stuff as always, man. Enjoy your day at Hallis Hall, and I'm sure that we will talk to you soon, and we'll definitely be listening to the Take the North podcast as well. Thanks, Weedsy.
Very much appreciated, and I will get the Hard Knocks today, I promise.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you. That's Dan Weeder. Sounds like he was driving out to Hallis Hall.